A big central planning government is what nearly all of us know, expect, and foresee. The U.S. government has never gotten smaller year after year. On that course, the world has many examples in history of how well that works out. A change is required, and my guest has some ideas about how to get there. The key idea is decentralization. It's possible, and as it happens, may be the only way to prevent what's coming. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 164.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Holiday party baking starts pretty soon. Make your life easy and dazzle your guests with pastry courses from Kiko. Kiko is a skilled teacher. Make excellence in your kitchen this holiday season with Kiko's Cakes. Use my affiliate link, culinarylibertarian.com/Kiko's Cakes. Or click the link on the show notes page. My guest today is Legal Man. Legal Man is a podcaster and a lawyer who's been practicing for over 30 years. He is America's most trusted and beloved lawyer because he tells people the hard truth about the system. He's been a self-certified master practitioner for almost 20 years. Hello, Legal Man. Thank you for joining me today on the Culinary Libertarian Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Before we get rolling in here today we're going to be talking about decentralization, which is kind of like secession, but then maybe not quite, and we'll talk about how those things are different. Can you give us a bit of a bio for the people who may not know who you are?
Sure. I'm a lawyer. I've practiced for more than 30 years, and I've done all sorts of different kinds of law. Started a huge law firm with hundreds and hundreds of lawyers and left there and did criminal defense work for a year and got kicked out of multiple courts. And then I started practice with some friends, and we went through that for about 8 or 10 years. And then one of my partners kind of blew up on basically hookers and blow and got a bad divorce. And the other one was a cheater. And and then I kind of worked my own stuff with other lawyers for the last, 20 years or something. And I started a podcast about a year and a half ago called The Quash, because I couldn't believe what I was seeing when people were seemingly okay with this idea that they could lock down for 15 days to flatten the curve, and somehow that was okay with people. And I couldn't believe that literally nobody I heard was speaking up about what the actual issues are. And I'd known for years that people were fundamentally confused about the stupid Constitution and just their heads filled with unbelievable amounts of garbage about it. And I'd written a blog years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years, and I still keep it up, but I don't ever write on it anymore. And I got kind of burned out on it. And I decided that I would, now that they have this kind of podcasting technology, was so much easier. And I was super burned out on writing a complex article to make it simple for people is very time consuming. And so I can cover a lot more material in a podcast. And so I started a podcast, and I've got a pretty active Twitter. It's pretty active. I like to see people on there. So I try to explain to people the very fundamental ways that they've just been lied to about the way the system actually fits together. And I blame these constitutional conservatives and media who pretend to be on everybody's side. And so that's kind of the niche I have. And a lot of people they just get very offended when they hear my message because they're so just incredibly identified with the idea of freedom and liberty and the Constitution being this brilliant thing and our founders being this group of people who just cared about nothing but freedom for everybody. And when I blow that up with basic facts and logic, they don't like it.
True enough, and I've seen some of the posts. So, so you have brought up a topic on one of your episodes, and I don't remember, in probably more than one, about decentralization. And it seems immediately like, oh yeah, okay, I understand the term. But if you actively think about what that means, and I want to get into that part, it becomes, well, it has the potential to be a really big problem for some really good logistical reasons, but also there's some mind shift problems and things, other kinds of hurdles besides just actual real ones. So when you talk about decentralization, now this may seem obvious, but what is the central thing that means we decentralize from, and then how far does it go?
Well, the thing about decentralization is that the reason it's important is that if you're going to pretend to have a government that's a so-called representative government that the people consent to, and that's what we purport to have. That's the fundamental basis of what supposedly makes our government so much better than these horrible dictatorships. We feel free to fly around the world blowing up. And if you're going to have that, you have to have consent and you have to have actual representation. And we have neither of those two in this gigantic behemoth. Each representative up there in Congress purports to represent almost 800,000 people. Well, that's ludicrous. That's more than 10 gigantic stadiums, Michigan stadiums full of people with one person who supposedly represents me. That can never work because what happens if he's pro-abortion but anti-gun and I'm anti-gun and anti-abortion? Well, how's it going to work? If you have one single thing you disagree about, you can't get a representative up there. And so when you decentralize, the concept is that the people have to keep decentralizing until you get to the point where you have significant agreement, not 50.1% of some jacked up fake vote. You have to have real agreement. And the way you get that is by continuously limiting what the government has any authority to do. See, it's easy to get agreement about the vast majority of stuff people care about. I tell people all the time, look, you've got to have massive decentralization, and they constantly worry about being attacked and, well, what we would do about roads? Oh, well, what are we going to do about police? How are you going to protect rapists and murderers from killing you? It's always the same thing. There's no problem getting agreement. You're going to get agreement with 90% of the people that we need some basic roads. That's not hard to get agreement about. I've never in my entire life seen anybody arguing about how we don't need a road, that there need to be no roads. Of course there's roads. Everybody wants to have some basic way to be able to call some entity if you have some kind of problem. There's a maniac with a gun on the street. Well, okay, you can probably take care of it yourself. Most people don't want to take care of themselves. And so the problems come with all these things that nobody really can agree about that ultimately boil down to they take my money and they hand it to somebody else. Well, I'm never going to agree about that. And so you have to keep decentralizing. It's really very easy to keep decentralizing until you have agreement, because there's agreement. There's all sorts of different ways you could decentralize. Like if you want to have a so-called national defense, okay, which everyone's so supposedly worried about, the Chinese coming over, the Russians coming over, it's mostly just a fantasy. But to the extent you really want to have it, you can just have some loose confederation agreements and joint sort of defense pacts amongst the areas that are already decentralized. And that would solve that problem to the extent you even need it, I personally don't worry about that kind of stuff, but people do. And so there's lots of different practical ways you can start reducing it. And I made suggestions in one of my shows called What Can We Do? And I gave some very simple things that we could actually do in every single state doesn't require any constitutional amendment. And if one state wants to do it and another state doesn't want to do it, then that's fine. And that's what actual consent of the people looks like. That's what it looks like.
Seems so. I don't disagree with you. In fact, I agree with you completely. I was reading an essay by Donald Livingston called The Founding and the Enlightenment. And he mentions a couple of people, Johannes Althusius, and that for Althusius, consent was an ongoing affair. It wasn't that somebody 200 years ago consented to something that now I'm obliged to follow. But the key, according to Livingston, for Althusius was consent could also be withdrawn at any time. So maybe 200 years ago, somebody said, yes, I'm in favor of this thing. But now we realize, okay, that wasn't really a good idea. We take away our consent.
Right.
That sounds like, first of all, that's nowhere to be found in our current system. We have 435 people just writing laws because, well, either they want to, but they're probably being incentivized by some lobbyist group to do that.
Right.
But certainly they're not asking me, they're not asking you, hey, should we expand this national park to twice its size? Well, I would say no. I would say either sell it off to pay down the debt or give it back to the people you took it from. But those aren't options we're given. So when you talk about consent, do you mean at every level where, quote unquote, government exists?
Well, it's ultimately, that's two questions, even though it's really only one stated question. And that is, what is my belief and what do I believe is practically achievable? Those are two different things. I personally think, look, you need 100% consent. Otherwise, it's coercion. There's only two ways to get agreement. You force me or you get my agreement. That's it. There's nothing else in between. And if you're going to purport to have a free people making their own choice, people used to understand that you have to give the people the option to opt out. And in fact, all sorts of great thinkers have already written about this multiple times. And people were well aware of it in the 19th century, that you have to give people the opportunity to simply say no to this gigantic government. But now it's become so big and so intrusive, you can't get away from it. Consent is important for multiple reasons. And of course, the concept that some people 240 years ago had a vote at some time and now I'm bound is ludicrous. Nothing like that's recognized in the law. And nobody who actually voted for that and formed that government, so-called back there, called the Constitution, believed it could be binding on all people for all times. They knew that's ludicrous. The government itself, inside the government, one Congress can't even bind another Congress. They can't even bind another Congress. And so they know that a vote from some other time, from some agent who I had no contact with, can't bind me 240 years in the future. Do you purport to imagine that if you and I decided to have a vote right now, that everybody for all times would now be bound by that vote? Of course not. It's idiotic. It's not consent. And the reason that's so important is that consent is the central issue in any government. It's only coercion or consent. And so you need to have ongoing ways for the people to consent. Otherwise, it's just lip service. And that's why I suggest that secession needs to be on the ballot in every single state, every single statewide election. And that way, the United States government has to constantly make a case that you need to stay in this gigantic behemoth, that that's to your interest. If you just had that, and it doesn't work to have it only one time, because then they can kookify it and nobody will figure what it is. And you'll look like an oddball and they can make it seem like this horrible, terrible thing. But if it was always on there, people would start to become curious about it and they would start to understand that it's about consent. And if you look at the structure of the Constitution, what we're even told about it, it makes no more sense than the corona narrative we're given with the two masks and no mask and you have to wear a mask and my shot protects you and I'm not as fully protected with my shot until you've had a shot that doesn't protect you. The Constitution makes just as little sense because it talks about states' rights and individual rights and all this other crap. But when you look at it, if you're a minority state, what power do you have? So you have no power. They can simply vote anything they want against you. And what is your supposed option under our theory that we're given? That you get a constitutional amendment. Well, that takes 75% of the states. Well, I just told you, you're a minority set of states. You can't possibly get a constitutional amendment if you are a set of minorities. That's it. And so if minorities don't have rights, then to talk about rights is meaningless, because if the majority simply want to abuse a minority, they're free to do it in our system. I explain to people all the time, what does it actually take to violate the Constitution for the government? It takes winning an election. That's it. Once you win an election, you can just pass whatever you want and it becomes the law. And then the only way you can even hope to try to stop that is to have the government itself, which is the court, try to, years down the road, maybe rule in your favor, which they never do. But the protections are meaningless. And that's why you have to have consent. And the founders all knew this. They all knew you could leave. The states could leave. Of course they could leave. The states formed the federal government for their own benefit. It's like saying if you're in you form a limited partnership, and now you're as a limited partner, you can no longer leave. Now the general partner gets to tell all the limited partners what they can and can't do. It's idiotic. They can either dissolve the partnership or you can simply step out. And that's the deal. You have to be able to step out, because if you can't step out, if there's no threat that the people can step out, then what you have is the situation you see, which is they can just pit every little kind of group against each other. And there's no way you can ever accumulate enough people in order to actually have any freedom, because you have absolutely no way to enforce rights as a minority. It's totally impossible. It's just lip service.
It sounded like you were talking about the compact theory versus the nationalist theory. And that's something for listeners who heard Livingston's name and said, oh yeah, I've heard about this guy. The essay is in the book called Vital Remnants. And and he touches on that too, but I don't want to get too far off of that topic. But I think the case is easily made that the contract theory is, in fact, the thing that you were talking about, because the states acceded, and certainly they can secede. So let's grant that we have, for now, established 50 countries. We've decentralized the federal government. Now we have 50 countries. Even at that, we're going to have, however we phrase the term, polarization or opposition or minorities, we're going to have people who disagree with whatever the position is for whatever the thing is to do. Maybe everyone would agree that we need to have electricity. Maybe everyone would agree we need to have something that resembles law. We don't want chaos. So where we agree on the fact that we want to have law, now we are going to create, not we, this is, it's tough to get around the pronouns, a factionalization seems a natural byproduct of any decision.
Sure, of course.
Is there a way to...
Well, are you saying there's going to be disagreements amongst the 50 states? Are you saying there's going to be disagreement within each of the 50 states?
Within each of the 50 states.
Sure. And that's why what I propose is the same thing. It is that once you've finally gotten out of this gigantic morass, then once again, you simply set up another set of decentralizations, which is every single county, every time there's a statewide election, every single county has the option to get out. And they can secede from that gigantic state. And you keep doing that until you have small enough groups where the people are clearly in agreement. And that's what it means to have a group of people who actually can decide on what they want to do. And they can agree how they want to interact with the people who are next to them. And when you don't force people to do stuff, you don't have fights. When this country was so-called growing back in the early 20th century, there's massive amounts of immigration. Each one of the groups was not at each other's throats in the cities, because they kind of lived in their own areas and they kind of interacted voluntarily. And it was through that where it was like, you know, I kind of like those traditions they have, and you kind of see them for a while. And then you go back and you hang out with your own people, and that's where you stay. It's just a basic part of human nature that people like to kind of be around people who are kind of like them. That's, you can't get away from it. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not you have black skin or white skin or anything else. It has to do with just cultural comfortableness. Whatever you grew up with, you're kind of comfortable with. I love foreign cultures, and I used to prior to the stupid COVID crap. I used to love to go to these little independent restaurants that were run by people who are immigrants, and the husband cooked and the wife worked the front, or vice versa. And I enjoyed that. I would go in, I'd sit, I'd talk to them, eat this crazy stuff from all over the place. And then I went home and I had my own stuff, and I don't have to have that every morning. There's not some centralized thing where I go in and for lunch, they feed me this Afghani food, which I don't want today. I might want it next Thursday, but I don't want it today. And when you don't force people into this stuff where it's one size fits none, everybody gets along fine. The problems come when people have the ability to use government to try to force something onto other people. That's it. That's when you start getting the problems. And if there's no system to get control of, then there's no way to force it on the other people. There just isn't. And to the extent that some of the problems that you have, which are reasons why people can be sold on the idea of these large governments, they can never go away, because you're always going to have some bad people, and you're always going to have some scared people, and you're always going to have some people who want to take advantage of systems. It's true, whether you have government or not, that's going to exist. But I always just say, hey, look, where are the number one problems you have? Are they in dealing with your neighbors who are doing something, or are they in dealing with the government that's trying to make you do something? Almost every damn problem can be traced back to these governmental regulations and things that get enforced. They don't come from having a neighbor down the street who likes to have a party on a Saturday afternoon and serve whatever the hell food they want. They're not requiring you go down there and participate and pretend you enjoy it. They just offer it. If you want to go, you go. And if you don't, you don't. But that's not government. And so, sure, there'd be bad people out there, and you have to have ways to deal with them. But I tell people all the time, when the Revolutionary War, that most people who push back against my concepts just love and imagine is this fantasy that they've been sold, I tell them, what do you think the plan was when they started the Revolutionary War? What was it? Was it to have the Constitution and all this stupid shit? No. All it was to get rid of the tyranny. First, you have to solve the problem. You have to triage. You've got a horrible government. It's massive overreach. We need to get rid of it. And then let's see what the people can agree to. You don't have to solve every problem. This is always the same objection. Well, what's your plan? Well, what'd you do? And they want this elaborate, complex explanation of how we can, in effect, reproduce what we have, but make it better. Well, what we have can never work. That's the problem. What we have, these giant centralized systems, can never work. They will never work anywhere. And there's not a single case of any government in the entire history of the world where it started out large and it got smaller and smaller. It started out small and it stayed small. Every single government follows the exact same route. Starts small, grows bigger over time, never shrinks, takes over your entire life until either it kills all its own people and collapses on its own, or the people rise up and throw it off and then start the same stupid thing over again because they haven't learned that it's always going to do this. And so, yeah, there are problems that can never ultimately be solved, but the solution is for people to understand the nature of government and the nature of the problems, to watch government and to keep it as small as possible, and never, ever, ever fall for their ridiculous explanations about how they're going to solve problems, because they never solve problems. They never solve problems. I've asked people endlessly, name one single problem voting has ever solved. Name one. If it's such a great deal, name a problem voting solved. They never can. They never can. All they can ever come up with is that they reversed a government policy that was already in place. Well, it wouldn't have existed if there hadn't been the stupid voting to begin with. And I challenge anybody, come up with a problem that voting solved. Just find one. You won't find it.
I often quip that if voting did anything, they would make it illegal.
Of course. It's such a silly, obvious scam. You know, and the reality is, after the Revolutionary War, what people seem to forget is that we didn't get the Constitution. we got the Articles of Confederation, and it's taught in this very kind of blobby way where, oh, we needed bigger government. It wasn't working. As though there was some huge uprising demanding more government. There's nothing like that. It was a small group of very wealthy people who realized with the Articles of Confederation, they're never going to be able to get control. It had firewalls that you could not get through. And so they wanted a centralized government because they understood the power of growing a centralized government over time. They understood that. And that's exactly what they instituted. And anybody who goes and researches the stupid Constitution, and the way it was ratified and written in secret, none of the notes were released for 40 years. And then the jacked up vote that so-called ratified it. They called the army out in Delaware. There were so many obvious violations. It made that 2020 election look legitimate. That's how ridiculous this so-called vote was that ratified the Constitution. And if people didn't have such a, oh my God, there's so much just flag waving nonsense that's been put into their head about the Constitution being the most brilliant document ever. If they understood that the Articles of Confederation actually do what most people who love the Constitution imagine the Constitution does, if they understood that, they wouldn't love the Constitution so much. They'd see it for what it is. It was a scam, a coup by very, very rich people. That's why Patrick Henry just refused to even go. He smelled a rat in Philadelphia. Everybody did who had anything on the ball knew what they were pulling up there was a scam. And, of course, they sold it as this, oh, it's a limited, super limited, just has this little teeny tiny bit more power we have to keep fights between the states down. Who would not trade the situation we have right now with this insanity for having some states fights? Oh, there's fights, there's trade fights between the states. We'd take that all day long compared to the insanity we have now. But that was the supposed reason we're given. And this is the problem, like I say, is that you have all these issues. They require so much sort of fundamental rethinking of the narrative you have in your head, the history you've been given, all the things that supposedly go on with the Constitution in our country. And until you can get those out of your head, most people just simply cannot start to move forward. They really can't.
Getting the content you're talking about, you of course know that it exists, and I'm finding it, but it ain't easy. It's tough to. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. One, I think that they make it hard to find, and it's mm-hmm. a little bit easier now with the digital world. But it's a challenge to know who is the person you should be listening to. That's really tough to know, because what do you ask? If you ask the constipated conservatives, they're going to give you their standard rote, you know, here are the three top radio talk show hosts, and
yep.
they're all terrible.
All terrible.
But they all sound exactly the same, so they must be right.
Exactly.
So, but, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's such an important point you raised, because it's the entire thing I push all the time is that, look, if someone is out there in media and they're making millions of dollars, okay, they are not your friend, period. They are not your friend. They are no threat to the system. The system will never allow somebody to make millions of dollars giving people information that actually threatens the system. That is such a simple principle that people just can't accept. And the reason that talk radio, which I still believe is the most harmful media out there as far as hurting the cause of freedom. It's much worse than liberals, because anybody who wants to listen to liberal stuff, they're unreachable. They're so far lost in the maze. They have no chance. They don't even want the right things. At least people who listen to that kind of talk radio crap, they want freedom. They want a smaller government. They want liberty. They want the right things. But then they're driven into a ditch every time by these guys. And that's what they're there to do. They're there to make sure that people who listen, who want freedom, are 100% driven into a ditch that can never fix anything, but sounds great. It sounds really great. And it's such a difficult hill to climb to try to get through to people. And I've tried countless different examples and ways. One I think is very helpful is these constitutional conservatives, just like the liberals, they all think Lincoln was fantastic for saving the Union. Okay, so that's one that you can know right there that they are not legitimate, because it is totally impossible to hold a voluntary union together with a war. See, that's not possible. There is no set of facts where that can happen. You can certainly go down there and so-called free slaves, which was not what the North was doing, but whatever, some delusional people probably did believe that, probably did sign up for that, just like tons and tons of people sign up to go to make the world safe for democracy in World War I and to go get weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. People are fooled every day by the United States government and every other government, and to believe that they're fighting the good fight on behalf of whatever it is they imagine they believe in. It's just a banker war. And the Civil War was a classic example of how there's simply no way you can fight a war, hold a union together, and then claim that it's voluntary union. It doesn't matter what the war is about. It doesn't matter about anything else. That's a total impossibility. And if you can get people, that's such a simple example. I use it as a litmus test, because if somebody can't even see that, they really aren't reachable, and I don't waste any more time with them because their cognitive dissonance is so strong. They can't accept such a fundamental misunderstanding that they've adopted and probably pushed their whole life, and they just are not willing to do it. And I tell them all the time, look, dude, I used to believe the same stupid shit about the Constitution. And I was a huge constitutional conservative, and I'm libertarian constitutional conservative. That's why I know all their arguments inside and out, because I used to make them all the time. I believed it 100%. And then I figured out the scam. And there's a big difference between people who, when they're finally given the sort of insight that, hey, what you're saying doesn't make any sense, they can accept it and then actually grow from that and change. And from the people who, it's the vast majority of people, you tell them something like that, they simply dig their heels in, and it makes them just believe more and more, no different than COVID believers, who you tell them, you give them basic facts that show that it makes no sense. The narrative makes no sense from day one, and it's changed 50 times. It won't make any sense. It would make zero difference to them. They will continue to believe no matter what. And that's the problem we face, is that how do you address people to open their minds to the fact that these things that they are so sure are true? Oh, their uncle fought and died. Their grandfather fought and died. Well, maybe in his mind, he was fighting and dying for freedom. I don't doubt it. Maybe he was. But the reality was, he wasn't fighting for freedom. He was fighting for these bankers who just tell these stories and to keep people together. That's it. That's all it ultimately is. It's a very difficult pill for most people to swallow.
I've done a couple of episodes on the risk individually for self-examination is, firstly, you might not like what you find. And now facing that, now you have a decision. Either ignore what you've just figured out about yourself, or face it.
Right.
Facing it can it's not labor, but facing it and addressing that can be the most fundamentally difficult thing you'll ever do in your life. And so I don't necessarily begrudge people for this. It's a tough line.
Yes,
I understand not wanting to self-reflect. I get that part, because What do you do when you don't like what you see, and then you have to change it? And that's exceptionally difficult. And so I get it. I sort of empathize with somebody who doesn't want to go down that road. But also
me
at
too.
The same time, I don't really need you telling me that I'm the one who's wrong. Because, let's just take Mississippi as an example, because I don't think either one of us are there. Mississippi is its own country. And there are, I'm going to use the word factions because it's the first one I can think of. It might not be the most accurate, but now we have the factions for people who want Maraud, and the factions for people who want law and order. But inside of those groups, there's disagreement. And it sounds to me, this seems like the Murray Rothbard argument for secession all the way down to the individual. Now that brings up another question. If we have these 50 countries, We have one country, Mississippi. Are we dealing with this is not part of my plan initially, but I came up with it yesterday. Do we have dual sovereignty, just like Hume was talking about, and just like Madison was talking about? We have the nation, which is not a nation, the country, but the individual or the state, which is what they were talking about when they talk about a nation, a country. So I don't really want to get too sidetracked, but I'm interested in your thoughts about how does sovereignty change in a decentralized or secessionist situation?
I think it does. And that's why it kind of goes to my point that what I personally want is, yes, I would like, I don't need government. Okay. But the vast majority of people are never going to get there. Okay. That's never going to happen. And so I talk in practical terms of what can happen, but there's nothing that prevents me from consenting to a government that I don't agree with everything they do. I can consent to a government that I don't agree with everything they do because I consider that what goes on whole is more beneficial than being on my own without that stuff. It's no different than a marriage. I don't like every single thing someone might do, but it doesn't mean that it's like, well, that's it. I want a divorce now. That's it because you did something I didn't like. It's not like that. You have to, each person gets the ability to decide, well, you know what? I think on whole, what this offers, this deal offers, is better than what I can create on my own. And yeah, I don't get everything I want, but I don't think that's that difficult for people to understand. The problem always comes is that they're doing so many other things that it's totally impossible and that it's not on whole a good deal. It's a terrible deal. And if you had a situation where on whole it was a pretty good deal, well, it wouldn't be a problem. I still maintain that if there was no Internal Revenue Service taking a piece of everybody's income, which is not income anyway, it's another way they control the language, they charge you a piece of your wage that's not income, and the entire structure of the income tax is totally and completely laughably unconstitutional. But if they just didn't do that and they didn't try to run schools and basically have all these crazy employment rules, I really wouldn't even care. I mean, as stupid and crappy and corrupt as the government is, would I really care if they weren't trying to come in and take half of everything I earn and then try to run every part of the schools and the hiring business practices? No, they could have their little scam going with the import post and the ex post, and they could, you know, run scams on the roads and run scams all over. They could do it, which is what they would do. But ultimately, would I care, would I devote large amounts of time just trying to get rid of it? No, I wouldn't. And so even when I just look at something as simple as that, my God, think how huge the government is, but say it only spent $1.5 trillion instead of $5 trillion. Would I care? I'd be like, yeah, this is a scam. Yeah, it sucks. But is it the end of the world? No. Is it affecting my life? No. Do I have to get rid of it? No. And that's why I think it's two different topics. What is a practical solution? And what is the theoretical correct point? And Rothbard's right, of course, is to cede down to one person. Everybody's his own authority. That's why consent is so central. You are entitled to consent to things. People consent to things all the time that are terrible for them, that I totally disagree with. I think they're making a horrible choice, but for them, they like it. Okay, just don't make me do it. That's all it is. And really, if the conversation were simply open and you had a real conversation about consent, the kind of conversation that we're having is what you had on the media from the so-called constitutional conservatives who never bring up consent. If you actually had people talking about it, you'd start getting a feel for what people really want and where the pressure points really are and what really needs to go and what there really isn't consent to. And you're never going to have any society when you have billions of people on this planet, you have hundreds of millions of people in this country. It's never going to happen. You're going to have something without conflict or dissent. You're going to have it. Of course you are. The goal is that there was a time when it was way, way less. Now it's just every damn thing, every part of your life. You can't even have a damn pronoun incorrect without the government coming and coming after you. You can get sued for it. You can lose your business over it. It's idiotic. You have to hire a trans person to work as your damn receptionist to be the face of your business. This is asinine. This is insane. This is not something people agree to. And that to me is the fundamental problem, is there's all these things that have gotten so incredibly extreme. And again, it's back to a very simple point I've told people again and again. You can love on the Constitution. I don't care. Honestly, it's because you don't understand what it does. But even if you want to live in your fantasy world about the Constitution having been the most brilliant document ever devised, the simple fact is lots of great ideas don't scale. Lots of great ideas don't scale. They just don't scale. There's plenty of great things that the business works great, but you scale, it doesn't work. It falls apart. And representative government is an example of something that doesn't scale. That's all. When the Constitution was fake ratified, the average representative up there was actually representing about 5,000 people who had any chance of kind of voting. That's all they represented. There was about 3 million people in the country. There was a huge number of slaves. There was tons of at least half women. Most people couldn't even vote. Then you had a ton of young people because it was skewed so young because so many people died of childhood diseases and accidents and everything else. It wasn't like our population now with a bunch of boomers and old people being kept alive to wheel them out to vote at some stupid time. It was young people, and most of them couldn't vote. And so you had this very, very tiny amount of people. If you look at a local community, like in the one I live in, a small community, the city council, each city council member still represents about 25,000 people. Not voters, 25,000 people. You just count them up. That's fantastic representation. It's not as small as some towns where you can get even smaller, but there's no problem with me getting in touch with my city council member. If I cared to, I never do. But if I wanted to, I'm actually somebody they'll take a phone call from and have a meeting. This is only 25,000 people he represents. But when you have 800,000 people, it's completely pointless. And so that's the problem. It doesn't scale. And my city does very few things. And so one in 25,000, that's not that bad. I get my city, yeah, I go in there, they have pretty good services. It's not terrible. And so again, it's a situation of where it's like, well, it's not ideal. I'd prefer it to be smaller, but am I up there protesting and taking my stupid 2 minutes to rail on them? No, I'm not going to waste my time doing that because it's just not that big a deal to me. But if they were taking half of everything I earned, you damn well right I'd be up there bitching at them, and I'd be running against the guy, and I would get them out of office. And if we had the kind of representation that we had when this country was founded, my point is that it was more representation than I get in my city council. I had more representatives per population than I have in my city council in my little city. That's what the federal government's representation looked like. Well, again, it doesn't scale. You can't have it. If we were going to have the same number of representatives that we just had back then when the country was so-called founded on the fake Constitution, if you just had that, you'd need about 50,000 representatives up there in Congress instead of 435. Well, if we just did that, how different would it be? Right? It'd be hugely different. People want to get the money out of government. There you go. You can't take control of it because I can go door to door with my constituents. And it doesn't matter how much fake money pours in from outside. They know me. I can shake their hand, meet them at meetings, and you can't run me out with money. But it would take 50,000 of them up there in order to have the so-called voting rights that everybody runs around talking about being so valuable. It needs 50,000. We don't have that. We have 435, and people have no idea. They think this is some kind of holy number. Most people, I guarantee you, 99% of the people you ask will have no idea when that 435 number was fixed. No idea at all. They couldn't even get you the century, much less a decade or anything close. That happened right at the same time, basically within a 5-year period. We got the federal income tax. We got 435 capped members of Congress, so no matter how big the population gets, your vote keeps getting diluted. We got the 17th Amendment that changed the way the senators were elected, which completely and totally blows up the constitutional structure. Anybody who believes in the Constitution and doesn't understand what that did, again, they don't understand anything about the Constitution. But we got that, and we got the income tax. All within that same period of time, in less than 5 years, we got all those things. Look at those things. Look at what those have done to the country. If we didn't change the way the senators were elected with that phony baloney populist nonsense they pushed at the turn of the century, which was just a concoction, if we didn't have that, everybody's seen those maps, right? The red and blue after an election. We control the country. Look at the red. Blah, 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 blah. All this stupid crap. If the senators hadn't been changed the way they were elected, well, guess what? Those senators would all be elected by the state legislatures like they were supposed to be, and they would serve the state. And guess what? We wouldn't have any of the legislation we have since 1913. Wouldn't have any of it because the senators would be all red. You could never get past the Senate. It would never happen. The states would never agree to it. All these states would not agree to be abused. But when you only have two and they're elected at large like we have now, well, so much money gushes into these elections in order to buy these senators. And that's why they never reflect the people. And that's why the system's completely turned on its head. Not to mention the way it was turned on its head in 1800 when they changed the way the Electoral College would work. People act like that's some kind of minor thing. Oh, what, the Jefferson election, blah, blah. Nobody even knows what the hell happened back then. But you can read the Constitution. And when it was originally written, what would happen is right now Joe Biden would be president and Donald Trump would be vice president. That's the way it was originally set up. So, and then impeachment works, right? You get one guy out because he sucks. Well, what do we get now? We get their hand-picked crook successor. How the hell can that help you? It makes no sense. In the original structure, you get Joe Biden out, Donald Trump would become the president. Okay, well, now you can see how impeachment might actually work under that system. But as soon as they changed the Constitution and amended it with this, like, 10th Amendment or 11th or 12th or whatever the hell it is, doesn't even matter. There's some little tiny amendment that like changed this Electoral College deal. They didn't change the way the impeachment works. They didn't change that. So you can know right then the scam is clear. It's exposed right then, because any lawyer has a document like that and sees a huge modification like that and doesn't take into account the whole. It used to be that the president got the most votes. The second most votes became the vice president. This is going to massively change things if they get to pick each other and then you get a ticket. That we got to do something about this impeachment thing, because otherwise you're going to have a tyranny. You're going to have one guy up there and he's not going to be able to get rid of him. As soon as you get rid of him, you just get his handpicked crook successor. Who can this just turn around and put the same guy back in as his vice president? And then they can just resign and become president again. It's so obvious to anybody who's a lawyer with any skill that that was a scam. And has anyone ever heard of this? Have you ever heard anyone discuss that? No, it's nowhere. And that's my point about the fact there's so many fundamental, simple things that cause problems. And decentralization is the answer, but explaining it to people is, it's a job. You know, it's a job because there's so many things to unlearn. So many things.
We've been talking about making things smaller.
Yep.
And today, I just saw a few things come through my phone, but in 2021, decentralization is as far away from the plate as is possible to get. And you were talking about, I had a failing to get agreement, and I'm sort of chuckling to myself, I got four people in this house, and so we can't agree on what to eat for dinner.
Bingo!
So, and I don't even get to exercise the authority of the man of the house, and you're reading this, because they just won't find them at eating dinner. Right? All right, so now there's, so while that's kind of comic relief for the moment, it did kind of make me think about, and you made a valid point where not anyone has to agree 100% with all of the things being suggested. It's okay not to consent to this thing or to that thing. And I think that, you know, you mentioned the marriage. Marriages work on sometimes compromise. I've never owned a business, but I'm going to guess that on some level, there has to be some willingness to compromise. Now, Christopher Voss may say never split the difference, but, you know, there's certainly with raising children and making dinner, there's a bit of a compromise. I don't want you to have donuts for dinner. What can we find instead? So you're going to get something you don't want, and you're going to eat something that I'm not thrilled with, but at least you're eating something, and we meet in the middle. A compromise by consent seems something that is acceptable, but now we have nothing even close to that kind. We have, you know, BLM Marxists and strict, complete, totalitarian, authoritarians, pick whatever isms or asms you want, telling us this is how your life is going to be. And in some cases, like today, those voices are coming from someplace far, far away, maybe say Sweden.
Yes.
And so now we have Build Back Better, which isn't even an American idea, but we're being force-fed this really bad idea, and I've done a few episodes about that. With what's going on, is there any hope that informing people about decentralization is going to lead to anything that's hopeful? That's two hopes in one phrase.
Well, I don't know. It's for me, it's two things. I make a podcast because I think people are entitled to hear the truth. Even if we can't actually get a change, it helps to know the truth. It helps each individual to understand the truth. It helps you to be able to defend yourself against the system a hell of a lot better. And it gives you a lot of peace once you understand, because you no longer sit there stirring and trying to figure out why this and it's always broken. And I get so sick and tired of hearing these idiots talking about how they're shocked. They can't believe what's going on. Dude, it's nothing shocking about it. I don't even have to read the news. I know what's going to happen. You're wasting your time. What do you mean shocked by this opinion? Oh, shocked by the Democrats doing this. They're always going to do this. And what I would say about it is that, one, the only solution is to get people to understand. See, once people understood, there's lots of solutions open up. Until people understand, there are no solutions. And so you can spend your time on all sorts of other things, but they aren't going to work. See, nothing's going to work until you get people to understand the actual problem. That's why I spend my time on that. Look at Venezuela. Well, the people are eating their own pets. Okay, the zoos they're completely screwed in a million different ways. And what do they want? They want a new, better government. It's idiots because they don't understand the problem. And see, when you have the kind of pressure we're having now, it's an opportunity for some additional people to potentially be open to hearing a truth that's very radical, as opposed to the same old stupid shit that they're fed again and again and again that obviously doesn't work. It doesn't work anywhere in the world. There's, like I said, there's no history whatsoever of any government ever getting the people getting more and more and more freedom as the time goes on. Their government's shrinking and giving them more and more liberty. It never happens. It's always the opposite. And as to decentralization with regards to the dinner, I would say the analogy is better to say, is it easy to get agreement that you're going to eat dinner? Yes, see, you can get agreement. You're going to eat dinner. See, that's where it ends, maybe. It might be that, well, if you want to have dinner and you want me to make it, this is what I'm making. You can either make your own dinner, okay, or you can eat what I'm making. I'll be happy to make you some. And then, but in our system, what's happened is not only do they purport to have the authority to tell you that we're all going to eat dinner. Okay, well, we already agree we're all going to eat dinner. And under that so-called authority, they then tell you not only what you're going to eat, but where you have to buy it, when you're going to eat, how you have to cut it, how many times you have to chew it, whether you can swallow or you can have a drink of water in between, what you're going to have for it. They tell you every single thing, the plate size it has to be on, how many tines a fork has to have, whether the knife has to be sharpened a certain number of times prior to the time, and in between, we have to wipe it off with a napkin, whether you put a napkin in your lap, you have to put it on your chest. They tell you every single thing under the guise of we have to have dinner. We've all agreed we need to eat dinner. Okay, maybe we have all agreed we need to eat dinner. Maybe we haven't, I don't know. But we haven't agreed to all this other crap. And that's the difference, is that it's so easy to get agreement on the basics that and the government is supposed to just be doing the basics. That's what we're told. It's a limited government. Limited, express powers, all this stupid crap from the Constitution. But then what do you hear? Oh, bad policy. All that has to happen for the Democrats to supposedly run wild and turn this into a Marxist country is to get elected. What does the Constitution do? I don't understand. If we can just be turned into a Marxist country where the government just takes over every part of our lives, then how is it limited? What is the Constitution doing? It doesn't make any sense together. And so I think that a huge number of the issues are just, they're very muddled and confused in people's minds because the topics are never discussed in depth. They're just glossed over, all the topics that matter, for good reason, because they're trying to drive everybody into this gigantic governmental system. But if you had more conversations with people like we're having, a lot more people would start to understand. People who listen to my show regularly, they understand, and they give me examples all the time of being able to give the kinds of examples I give to other people and to open their minds. Because anyone whose mind is open, when you hear the kind of simple things I explain to people, a lot of people go, oh, yeah, well, shit, you're right. That I never thought about that. That doesn't make any sense. And they'll nab onto it, but their entire lives, decades and decades and decades of listening to these stupid constitutional conservatives say nothing but Democrats bad, Republicans good. And then when the Republicans get in, do they get rid of all the laws? Do they get rid of Hillary Care? Do they ever get rid of anything? No. What they say is, now we got to hear about how Mitch McConnell and the rhinos and Olympia Snow, we got to get organized. Well, I don't even live in those states. There's literally nothing I can do to get rid of those losers. And the entire system is set up to make sure that each little corrupt politician who gets elected locally, if he can bring back pork for his district, he will keep getting elected. So you have an incentive to elect a corrupt person who will screw everybody else in the country to the maximum extent possible in order to benefit you. Again, a system like that can never work. And because there are never conversations about it, we can't have a conversation. We're just shooting in the dark about imagining, well, what would decentralization look like? What do people want? What can we agree on? Because there's no conversation about it. Because there's no conversation where you could start actually understanding, oh, well, this is someone's objection, and well, here's how we could meet that. It's everybody's been on the internet. Look, it's impossible for a single centralized thing to ever outsmart the people. All it takes, I'll see tweets periodically from like the weirdest accounts. You'd be like, that's hilarious. That is such a great concept, a thought, the way they pierced it in some form or fashion. Well, it's because that's why agorism works, because you can never tie it all down. People will figure out ways around it. And that's why the power comes from having the conversation so we can hear what other people have to say and then deciding how you could really shape a consensual concept that the people would be in general agreement about and be okay with. And you wouldn't have all these divisions. But the reality of what government does and what it lives on is dividing the people. They divide and conquer. So they found a million different ways to purport to have authority to order us that we have to have critical race theory taught in our schools. Instead of just saying the government has nothing to do with schools, you want to take your kid to a school that teaches critical race theory? More power to you. I don't go to that school. My kid doesn't go to that school. But because government controls every aspect, it says you have to go to school. Then it tells you the curriculums that can only be approved. And then it tells you you have to have a certain amount of school in order to go to a certain other school that has an accreditation that the government has to have. And the teachers who teach in there have to teach a certain thing and be approved. And you have to have that amount of government approved accredited education in order to practice a certain kind of profession. And then you have to it's endless government restrictions and requirements. And that's the part that the people's minds are never opened up to. We don't have to reach agreement. You want to have a bunch of dumbasses running around pretending this is a racist country and that I hate black people to have because I happen to be white? Go knock yourself out. I don't care. As long as you're not trying to force me into a system where I have to bow to that or that gets financed by me to be used and weaponized. That's only possible through government. See, that's only possible through government. And these very fundamental issues, they're intentionally muddled and confused in people's minds so that the system can continue to grow. And it's the same all over the world. It's the same all over the world. It's just this place happens to be a very bad case of it because people have this delusion that they're so super free here. Like this is the freest, most incredible place that's ever existed. And so it's really hard for them to see. When I travel around the world, I see a lot of places and the people in the street, kind of normal street vendors, they're and savvy, man. They know what's going on. And they always think I'm CIA because they know they're everywhere in the country. They're running everything. And the people here live in such a dreamland. And imagine the law enforcement, the CIA, and the FBI, they're all there to help us because they run, what, 24/7 programming on TV and movies about how they're out there fixing it. Queen Latifah, Ice-T, and Ice Cube all play police officers on television. This is, can people not see what this is set up to do? It's just, it's a brainwashing all the time. And so all these centralization and decentralization issues, there's a lot of stuff that people have to discuss and work out, but there's no conversations being had. There are no conversations to be had, and you can't have them in a theoretical construct of Murray Rothbard or Lysander Spooner and say everybody's just going to be an anarchist and you're going to have your, and it's never going to work. You're never going to be able to apply. And everybody who goes down that road is really, they're just doing a disservice to what they want if they really want it, because what we want is the maximum amount possible. That's what I want. I want the maximum amount possible. I'd rather have the maximum amount that's practically possible than not have a theoretical amount that I'm never going to get. I'd rather just have a practical amount. It's like, okay, I'd rather improve my position. Well, the way we do that is we start having a conversation and letting people understand the real problems that need to be discussed and the real issues that might need to be worked out. And where is there general agreement? And where is there not? And where do we need some input from people about some possible solutions? That's what we need.
Well, I am shocked the government would do that. Obviously, we need more government.
There you go. We need an investigation. We need a government investigation to get to the bottom of this.
Exactly. And we have investigated ourselves and found we did nothing wrong.
There you go.
Let's take a few moments out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
Okay, let's lighten up a little bit. I want to move into a little bit of a short answer part of the show, which can or cannot have anything to do with the government, but some of the answers are fairly, some of the questions are plain, and the answers are obvious also. Of the five flavors, sweet, salty, bitter, sour, or umami, which one do you prefer?
Oh, man. Probably between, I don't know, salty and sour.
What's your favorite food?
Oh, wow. Like a type of food or an actual dish? Like, I like Thai food a lot. I like Thai food, but if I had to eat it every day, I'd probably stick with some kind of egg dish because there's so many different types.
What's your least favorite food?
Oh, wow. You know, some of those weird sea like vegetable things they eat in Asia, those things are pretty terrible to me. These taste really bad. They have slimy, they're just, everything about them is gross.
What gets you excited?
I like, I probably like things that are funny, and I like things that are very clever. Those get me excited, things that are really clever.
What turns you off?
Really closed-mindedness.
What sound do you love?
How about a legit groan? Positive groan.
from someone being clever.
Yes. Yeah, well, it was just, how about from someone on the other side of the gender category?
Wow, you are a lawyer with the words. Very good. What sound do you hate?
Sound do I hate? I can't stand hearing politicians talking. I really can't.
What is your favorite food indulgence?
Boy, that's a tough one. I like really, really good carrot cake.
Me too. My waistline, not so much.
But. Yeah, love it. Lots of icing. My sister makes a fantastic one with a perfect balance.
There's a... On my blog, I have a recipe for what I'm convinced is... First, it's very easy to make, but it is absolutely the best chocolate cake I've ever had. And it can, you can bake it in a bundt, in a round, in a tray. It just can be cupcakes in any form. Mm-hmm. It plays nicely, which is really impressive. But that chocolate cake with cream cheese icing...
Oh.
It's about as close to nirvana as you can find on Earth, as far as I'm convinced. It's just...
Sounds great.
Awesome. It really is. It's your insulin will be mad at you. Your pancreas will say, how dare you? But holy crap, is it good. This is a big question. The question is, well, the answer is magnificent. But for people who are interested in the idea of any of the kinds of things we talked about, secession or decentralization, or at least understanding politics or the Constitution, are there a couple book recommendations you have for people who can kind of get an entry point into this kind of thinking?
It's a difficult question because so many people react differently to either written material and then the level of the written material, the depth, the density of it.
Right.
It's very difficult. I mean, it's they honestly can listen to my show. It's one of the things that it's pretty much the only topics I almost ever talk about. As far as reading material, you know, like a guy like Murray Rothbard's really a good writer. He's really pretty accessible for most people. I still think Lysander Spooner is the king for understanding. Yes, there you go. Yeah, I still think Lysander Spooner is the king for any anyone who really wants to understand the issues of consent and the different things we're talking about. He doesn't really talk about decentralization, but he's the king for me. His writing is so clear. And even though he wrote 150 years ago and he has that typical kind of, you know, complex sentence structure, one paragraph long sentence with a million different semicolons that I don't even know how to accurately use. It's amazing how good his thoughts are. They're really, really good. So if someone was going to read something, I would say pick up any of Spooner's essays and read one of those. Either read No Treason. It's not long. It's really great. I mean, it's impossible to read No Treason and continue to believe in the Constitution. Just totally impossible.
And you mentioned your podcast, which yeah. I will. Is there another way that people can follow you?
Yeah, they can either listen to my podcast, which is called The Quash, and it's pretty much anywhere, or they can go. I talk about the same kinds of things, and I've actually got a lot of great followers on Twitter because I used to have a no block policy for a long time, but then about 3 years ago, I just gave that up. And I actually have a very liberal blocking policy. Idiots come on and start coming at me. I just block them. And it helps my feed because my feed's not full of a bunch of jokers and trolls all the time. And so I'm legal man at US Law Review and I'm there a lot. And like I said, there's a lot of people who post a lot of really good stuff to it. I got a lot of people who are sort of like-minded, sort of similar to you. They're open. They know a lot of things. They at me a lot of things inside of my posts. And so it's a pretty good way if you just want to go there and just kind of, you know, sit in the background like most people do and just kind of read the stuff. It's funny too, because we don't take ourselves seriously. So if you're easily offended, then probably not the place for you. But if you like some gallows humor, then you'll like the people that follow my site.
I like the phrase gallows humor because there's
yes, it's all we got at this point. I mean, my God, got to laugh at it. I mean, look, we're going to do what we can to stop the insanity, but I want to have a few laughs before they kill me or put me in a camp. My God.
I agree with you completely. Laugh at it all while you can, because.
Yes. Right.
Well, I appreciate your time today. I think I went over. We didn't really talk about a budget, but anyway, of time.
It's not a problem.
So Well, thank you very much for accommodating me today. I do appreciate that. And I hope wherever in the world you are, it is a fabulous rest of the day for you.
Same to you. I really had a great time. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll add the links to Legal Man's Twitter on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/164. And I'll add the episode to the What Can We Do episode of Legal Man's, which was Quash, episode 31. That link will also be on the show notes page. I'll also add the link to the Secession episode with Mark Kresslins, which ties in to this episode. If you like the show, I would appreciate your support. Click over to culinarylibertarian.com/support for the Patreon link or the PayPal link. Please share this episode on your social media feeds and rate and review the show on your favorite podcatcher. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.